Welcome
What's
back.
that?
This is Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is the first part of XAML. Yes, it is. But
yeah.
It's Module 10, Module 8, originally 10. Module 8, second day. The third day is coming here, so don't miss out on that. Darren, before we go too far, where can I find you online?
You can find me online. My company website is crank211.com.
The number 2?
211.
Yes.
.com. So that's where you can find me. I'm also on Twitter at Darren May and so on.
You and I both live in Colorado.
We do.
All right.
Don't stalk us.
Very good. I'm jerrynixon.com, at jerrynixon on Twitter. I think you're on Twitter too, at Darren May.
That's the one.
Excellent. Yeah. All right.
It's uncanny.
All right. In this final module, we're going to be talking about two of probably the most crucial pieces of Windows 8, once you're past all the other ones. That is managing data access and the final submission to the store. And we'll go through the actual submission process. I'll pull up an app and submit it into the store before the end of this module.
So all of those who've already fallen asleep, you're going to miss this great part.
You are missing out on what is easily one of the most important, it's one of the top 8.
Yep. It's definitely right, one of the modules.
Yeah, this is what I would consider one of the modules.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Here we go. If you're up past midnight, kudos to you.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt.
Bravo.
All right, what are we going to talk about this module? Specifically, data strategies?
Yep.
All right, what are some of the options around data strategies we have?
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's have a look at the slides.
All right.
All right.
All right. So, bring it over to mine here, Danny.
Yeah.
Danny?
Yeah, not Barry.
Barry, leave it alone. All right,
okay,
so.
Okay, it's late in the day and we're clearly flagging.
What's the landscape that we have for storage options?
So, I mean, there's a number of things that we've got to think about. You know, at a macro level, you've got to think about, okay, am I storing the information locally or am I storing it remotely?
Yeah.
You know, those are two kind of key decisions need to think about. Also, there's other areas that we've got to think about in terms of where you've come from. You might be a existing desktop developer that's used to using .NET Framework 4, 4.5, so on and so forth. There are a number of very rich data storage aspects to those frameworks, such as system.data and so on. That
SQL Server.
Yeah, that thing. You know, and you may be very used to directly connecting to a database and being able to use Entity Framework, ADO.NET, and so on and so forth to interact with those data stores directly. If you come to the Windows 8 App Store applications with that expectation, you're going to run into a surprise.
Yeah, you will. There is no direct connection to using ADO.NET to a SQL Server or any other local database, including SQL CE, which is, I think, some developers would just assume.
Yeah, just
I'll just use SQL CE because of their experience with, say, Windows Phone. But SQL CE is actually not part of WinRT.
Yeah. So what's baked in?
What
do we have available?
Well, we have the file system.
Yep.
That's a reality. I can take the data that I have currently in memory, serialize it, and save it to a file.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
You'll also use system.web.
Yeah, sure.
HTTP client and so on.
More often than not, Windows 8 applications are connected applications.
Yes.
Using system.web just makes sense calling out to some sort of web service that does all the actual work.
Yeah. But what about if you really need some sort of rich relational model for storing your information locally?
That's right. We've already said you don't talk to a SQL database. You don't have SQL CE. What are the options?
Yep.
What is the option?
SQLite.
Okay.
Yep. Some people are surprised to hear this, but SQLite is the SQLite team actually created an extension for Visual Studio that, as the name suggests, extends the capability and actually has a Windows App Store extension that enables you to access this on Windows 8. It's also available for Windows Phone.
Yeah. Which that, I mean, you're wondering, what is my cross-platform story here?
Yep.
We know we're bringing WinRT closer and closer to being the same on the phone and the desktop. But more importantly, SQLite is the bridge as far as relational data in both.
Exactly. So that's kind of your story that for local storage. I mean, we talked about files as well. We've dealt with just pretty much flat files. Really haven't touched on serialization as part of this module. We did touch on it extensively in the first day. You know, the C-sharp fundamentals where we talked about XML serialization, yep. JSON serialization.
SOAP serialization.
Yep.
So don't skip it.
Don't skip it. I hate it. And so you can still use that with flat files if you wish to store them out, But what you lack is the relational aspect of interacting with the data store and only pulling back the records that you need. If you're going to use flat files and serialization, you basically need to read the entire file back into memory in order to query it and bring back certain elements. So, you know, there's a trade-off there. Moving to the other side, if we're going to talk about remote data, then you've got, of course, got web services.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a lot of capability out there. You know, we've got your SOAP services.
My web services are all in REST. That's easy enough.
Absolutely. You know, you can reach out to those. OData obviously provides up a number of useful interfaces around exposing data.
Yeah, sure.
And
does.
Being able to perform some querying actions via your query strings.
Sure. Yep. I could use SkyDrive, right? I could talk to the current user. They're using Windows 8, so I know they have a Microsoft account, more than likely. Odds are I can also talk then to their SkyDrive. They have to give me permission. But once they do, I can talk to SkyDrive as an opportunity for storage.
And we've talked about how you can extend out these default providers and actually have other providers out there for that. And of course,
like the Box or something like that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we've also obviously got Windows Azure sitting out there in the mobile services.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and at the same time, there are other providers like Windows Mobile Services as well. They're all there. Certainly, no competitor to Microsoft has been disabled. So, I mean, if you're using something and it's not directly on the Microsoft platform, it's still an option for you.
Yeah, it's a protocol that you can leverage.
Right. All right, so SQLite. Let's talk specifically about that because I do want to have some relational data. Mm-hmm. How do I install SQLite? You said it was an extension.
Yep.
I want to start with, if you're using Visual Studio Express, extensions are not supported. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to want to use something other than SQL Express, or I mean Visual Studio Express, obviously. But how do I install it? I go to the extension manager.
Exactly. You just bring it up inside Visual Studio. You select your extension manager, and you search for SQLite in the online options. You'll see that available, as we show. You download it. You install it. You'll need to restart Visual Studio, and then it will become available. Once you have that, and we'll show you this inside Visual Studio in a moment, you then select the extension and apply it to your project, so SQLite's enabled within your given project. That will then add some the references that you need to interact with SQLite. The second thing you need to do is you need to install the SQLite-net NuGet package. This will then wrapper the pinvoke integration into SQLite with some more native .NET enabled interaction. So you have a couple of files that are added into your application that encapsulate that interaction and makes it more object-oriented rather than just writing a whole bunch of pinvoke code.
So I can query with Link and Lambdas.
You can. For those of you not familiar with pinvoke is platform invoke, and it allows you to interact with COM interfaces and other DLLs via an integration syntax.
And now having a pinvoke does mean something when it comes to which processor you target.
Exactly. And that's one of the key things with some of these extensions that are out there. Some of them are getting better in terms of whether you need to specify a particular target platform. We kind of get very used to the idea of just being able to say that our application is targeting any architecture.
Yeah.
And that's the default
any
setting.
Any CPU is the
any
idea.
CPU.
Yeah.
And in the main, that's not going to be a problem. But when you're integrating out to some third-party DLLs, those DLLs may be built for and targeting a specific CPU infrastructure, be it x64, x86, or ARM. If you're integrating with a third-party library such as that, then you need to specify a platform that you're targeting with your application. When you're submitting, you're actually going to need to submit multiple builds of your application as well to target those.
So it's your app for the ARM, your app for x86, your app for x64. The user, on the other hand, they don't know that, right? Mm-hmm. They just get whatever right for their platform or whatever right for their architecture. But you as a developer have to think like that. As soon as you start using libraries or code that has this type of code that starts segmenting them out, you have to submit them three different times.
Absolutely.
Can we see it? Let's pull up Visual
Studio. Sure, there was
Studio
another key point that I wanted to make that unfortunately
it'll come to you as you're looking at it.
Just diverted, just flew out of my head. So, if we can see my screen.
Danny,
wake up.
Good job, Danny.
Good job, Danny. Woo, bravo.
Never thought I'd do this.
Slow clap. Okay. So, I've already installed. Let me back out. Let's go into Tools, extensions and updates. So inside here, this is where I would specify that I want to install SQLite for Windows runtime. You can see it's already installed, so we don't have to go through the restart scenario with Visual Studio.
Again, you got here through Tools Extension Manager.
Yep. Once we have that, then I need to add a reference to my particular project. So I right-click on References, say Add Reference. Come in here, I got a list of assemblies, solution, Windows. I want to select Windows extensions. And here is my list of extensions specifically for Windows RT. I do a check on the SQLite for Windows runtime.
Right.
That will then incorporate that reference in my list here, and I will see it down here.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. This is a standard way of including other libraries.
Exactly. The next step I want to do is I want to make life easy for myself and include the managed wrappers around that DLL.
Ah, so you can use Link.
So I can use Link. So I want to manage my NuGet packages. I happen to have this already installed. So here is SQLite-net, which is installed in.
So it would say install. You say install. It starts including files into
Absolutely.
Your project for you.
So it adds into my packages list and so on and so forth. And it adds these two files. Which are not small.
Is that right? But at least they're there.
Yes. 2,908 lines for SQLite integration, and then we've got the SQLite async, which wrappers most of the, or a lot of those SQLite methods into asynchronous activities. So if you want to investigate how to write your own async code, then this gives you a lot of infrastructure to look into things such as task, factory, start, new, and so on. That creates a lot of that framework. So it's a great reference material for building this type of infrastructure.
Yeah.
So I strongly recommend having a look at it if you're interested. That said, what we're just going to do is a whistle-stop tour of how we would incorporate SQLite into an application. This is not a full-on tutorial on how to build a rich relational interaction model, nor does it expose best practices such as building repositories and so on. This is just a very light introduction into how to incorporate it into your app.
Let me ask you some basic questions for developers who might be accustomed to SQL CE and have the same questions. SQL CE has an SDF file. That's the database itself. Mm-hmm. Is there a database file?
There absolutely is. Now, the advantage of this integration is that SQLite will actually create it for you if it doesn't exist. And so you've seen Jerry talk about the integrating with application data, current and local folder. So this allows us to find our local directories. And we can specify that we're going to create a database called SQL3DB. So it's customers.3 or S3DB, which is SQLite. We're creating that path, and then we're going to initialize this. And so this is in my app.xaml, is in the onLaunched event. Mm. So as I'm starting my application, I'm creating, doing some verification and setup to say, OK, do I have a database? The great thing about this is, if the database doesn't exist here, it's going to create the database structure.
Let me ask you another clarification question, because I can feel the audience asking.
You can feel it.
Is there a visual designer like there is for SQL CE?
Not currently, no.
Okay.
So basically, we don't have the same kind of rich experience we've come to expect with the SQL Server stack of tools.
Right.
So here we've either created a database and connected to it, or we've connected to an existing database.
I see.
Inside here, we're now saying create table. The great thing about this is this will allow us to detect whether the table exists and create it if necessary. If the table already exists, it's not going to destroy it or overwrite it, okay? Now, there's some questions I saw earlier on about what if I have an existing version of an application and I'm deploying a new version which requires some changes to my schema. There are some migrations that you can do, but you need to code for that. That's not something that the platform's just going to automatically do and convert and migrate your data. You know the schema that you had. You know the schema that you had in the future. Or you want to have in the future, you need to manage those migrations. Here's another key thing to think about when you're doing this is somebody may have skipped some updates. So they may be getting the latest update for your application. So don't always assume that they're always going to have the latest schema installed on their device. They may be moving to schema version 3 and they skipped schema version 2. So yeah. When you're writing this code, deal with those scenarios, because what you don't want is a disgruntled user that goes, I've just corrupted my local store. I've lost everything. That's really frustrating. And that's probably the
cleanest. I think the easy solution to that would either be to have a table that you put in all of your databases that says the version of the schema.
Exactly.
Or somehow name the database, the file itself, so database one dot.
Yeah. Or bring it out of the database. Have another setting that you're persisting, one of the contents files or so on and so forth.
Good point.
A lot of different ways we can do it. So anyway, these lines have created our environment. Then we're just arbitrarily calling a load data implementation. So if I navigate to load data.
So create table, by the way, creates a table based on the class structure?
Oh, yeah, damn good point. So what we've got here is a generic method that is referring to a model. So if I go out and have a look at the customer model, this is a very, very simple class. But what we can see is that we can use the attribute syntax to mark up these values. ID is marked as a primary key. We're also informing SQLite that we expect it to auto-increment and populate the ID every time we do an insert, so that we actually get unique values and so on. We can also put in required fields. We can do other types of validation on each of these elements as we would like. Yeah. I encourage you to look into using SQLite to really explore those capabilities.
Okay.
So if we come back, we specify we want to load data. So again, we create a connection out to our database path. Because the database may already exist, and this is just sample data, we're clearing out, just to show as an example how we would clear all the records that are in a database. So we can see that how this is really exploiting good integration into the .NET framework in terms of we're saying delete all, we can pass in a type qualifier, and that will do a lot of the work behind for us, so we're not having to worry about crafting SQL expressions in strings and so on and so forth to do that.
We could
do that if we so wish. Now what we're doing is pretty much what we would expect to see in terms of creating an instance of the customer object, and then we do a database insert. So what we can see here is this is very much more like ADO.NET in terms of we're interacting directly with tables and so on. We're not necessarily leveraging the same kind of deferred execution that we would see in Entity Framework. So we go through, we insert all of these. You can see that there's no explicit commit.
I assume there's also a dot update.
You have the full range of CRUD operations in terms of being able to create, retrieve, update, and delete.
Nice.
Okay, so what we're doing here is we're just setting up some test data. Nothing too interesting. If we come into the main page, if we look at the XAML, all we have going on here is a very simple UI that has a list view.
Mm-hmm. So a repeater.
Yep, and we have our item template, which is matched up for each of the items. We're binding it to name, city, and contact.
Nice.
If we look at the code behind, we have a main page, we have a loaded event. We've got a Lambda function that's going to be called during the loaded event, and this is really responsible for populating the item source of the customer list.
Ah, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Directly into the list that way.
Exactly. And then we're calling this getCustomers. If we look at getCustomers, returns an observable collection of customers for binding. We instantiate our list. We connect out to our database. We do a simple query. Notice it's a nice link syntax.
Yeah, it is, even with an order by.
Yep.
Nice. I guess I could do a dot where and everything else.
Absolutely.
That's cool.
We're iterating through each of the customers in our query, and we're adding it to our observable collection.
Don't you wish observable collection had add range?
Absolutely. Oh. Pretty much every project I do, I write that extension or incorporate
it's
my
so
extension.
Frustrating.
I know. It's just a simple little piece of code. Just stick it someplace. Anyway, so we're adding all of the customers to there. We're returning it. And so if I run this application, especially if I set the that as the startup project. Here's one I prepared earlier.
Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything, by the way.
Absolutely. It's because your brain was too slow to realize it.
Didn't make a single comment about what just happened. I just let it slide.
Exactly.
Some people don't do that. Some people just dwell on it.
Yeah, you were waiting. You were waiting for the train to wreck. That's what it was. And here we have as a list of the elements that we've placed inside our table.
When the application first was launched, you inserted into the database.
Exactly.
When the page was then loaded, you selected from the database.
Correct.
Very nice.
And that's a pretty simple way of interacting with the database. But you get this full, rich relational model. You can shape one-to-many relationships and so on and be able to start...
Joins, things that you expect.
So if you've got an application that really needs a rich relational model and one of the great advantages of having a database client side like this is you can pull across your rich information from your remote data sources, and you can use it as a local cache. So instead of having to keep reaching out for information that you know isn't changing that frequently, you can cache it locally, and it gives you a much more accelerated user experience.
That's cool. That was a great demo, being able to see and kind of demystify SQLite. I think a lot of developers think, who has the time to figure all this out? It's not as complicated as you might think, and you get a lot of value back from it. And a lot of developers are writing their own serialized code and all these pieces. Sometimes that's right. More often than not, just using a little database like this can save them a lot of pain.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's pretend we've added all of our charms. We've added all, it looks the way it does. The data comes from the database. Now we have our application. How can we put it up into the store itself, right? That's let's talk through the deployment process and specifically preparing for deployment. Okay, so if I'm preparing for deployment, first is to understand what the store gives to me. We talked earlier about the fact that the store talks to 230-some different countries, the fact that it's in 70-some different languages, 40-some different currencies. It's a pretty broad, global-reaching store, and it's only growing. So first of all, it gives us all that, which is cool by itself.
That's seems
a lot
useful.
For us to write individually for our apps. We'd never do it, right?
Yeah.
But it also gives the developer back a set of APIs. The first one is the trial API to allow them to detect whether or not the trial has expired, whether or not the user has gone ahead and purchased it, all the pieces that you would have had to either hard code or buy an API to allow you to do that in previous applications. Another piece that it gives you is the installer, where you might have previously used the
Install Shield.
Install Shield, or perhaps the Wise one, I forget what it's called as well. And just another piece for you to either buy and understand, or you could use the installer that comes with Visual Studio as well. But why? Because now it's all built into the store as again, right? We also handle the ability to do incremental purchases so that you can sell in-app purchases inside your application, where we handle all the fulfillment and all the completion of the commerce for you, as well as holding it all, handling and including handling tax reporting and things like that, which is pretty tricky. Again, we also manage checking to see if the application that the user currently has installed is up to date or not. And so we can handle not just checking, which is pretty nice, right? How often do you have you installed a desktop application that has some little thing that runs in your tray to see if it's up to date, only for you to kill that, right?
Yeah.
Now the developer doesn't have a way for you to check it. Now it's part built into the operating system to make sure your application is up to date and prompts the user to upgrade and handles the upgrade for him, for you as well. All you have to do is provide the next version to the store. It does all the rest for you on every single desktop in the world. Pretty nice. Very nice, actually. And then it also handles looking for prerequisites, making sure that your application, whether or not it supports a certain architecture, it can only be run and installed on a certain architecture. But also the store itself provides you as the developer or as the title owner the ability to have discoverability, to find your application not just in the store, but be able to be elevated in specific lists based on the popularity of your app, based on the ratings of your app.
Also the categories you chose when you published it.
And the categories. That's a great way, that's a great point. And, you know, we're pretty young into the store, and I think it's still worth pointing out there are several categories that are pretty lean. A lot of opportunity for developers to still be a pretty big fish in a pretty small pond right now that is only going to grow, and that opportunity, of course, will not last forever. So, great. That's what the store gives to you. Really, it's a bunch. And how much does it cost you? It doesn't cost you anything, right? The store is given to you by for free. The only time you pay is through when there's actual currency fulfillment, like monetary fulfillment.
Or to register as a developer.
Yeah, or to register as a developer. I do want to point out that if you're a student watching this, registering as a developer shouldn't cost you anything. You can get your developer account through DreamSpark, and that'll make that free. Also, if you're a professional developer and you have MSDN, either personally or through your company, MSDN also makes that account free as well. Again, if you don't have those, then right, you can purchase to be a publisher account, which is either $49 or $99. $49 is the individual account. $99 is the company account. Why would you pick between the two? There's a couple of reasons. The core reason is the company account has ability to more capabilities inside your app. If you buy or if you are an individual, certain capabilities are simply not available to you. You could write an application that uses those capabilities, submit it, only for it to be rejected because your publisher type doesn't have access to it. An example of that would be enterprise identity. If you want to be able to interact with the enterprise identity capability in an application, you have to be a company, right? That's really a part of the deal. Okay, so the package itself that you're about to prepare and we're about to do right now and submit to the store has a couple features that every package will. Of course, we have the app payload. This is the,
It says your app.
It's your app, right? It's everything. Yeah. It's the whole freaking thing.
All the files, any assets, everything related to it.
That's right. And then inside it, every single one, and we've talked about it over and over, is the application manifest. The application manifest not only identifies or not only spells out what the capabilities are you're declaring and asking for, including things like protocol activation and file activation, but also the identity inside the store that it's eventually going to be associated to. We'll show you how to do that in Visual Studio.
And also lists things like your images and everything associated with your app.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
Like we should your bring logo. That up as part of this.
Yeah, like your logo and things like that. In fact, yeah, let me go ahead and do that. Here is a, it's the info hub here. This is what we're about to submit. This is a completed app, and it's part of the source code. So if you go to xaml.codeplex.com, you can download it and use it. You can use this as reference for your own application if you want to, or just follow along what we're doing. So I'll build it just to make sure it works there, and I'll pull up the app manifest. The app manifest is sort of... it's sort of the summary of everything. Now, the app manifest at first, this is going to be generic. It won't be associated up to the store. And so the way that you associate your app manifest up to the store is you tell it to do the association. You don't have to do it this step. This is an incremental step if you want to do it. But I will just to show off. So if I'm going to, just to show off the capability, not to show off.
That was a Freudian slip.
Yeah, how could I do it to show off? It doesn't even make sense. All right. Beyond that, I'll right-click the project. It's the project I'm right-clicking. I'll go down to the store option, sub-menu here, right? Store, store, there. There we are. And I'll say associate app with the store. I'll go into the store. This dialog will pop up asking me to associate with the store, and I'll click sign in. This is going to be the Microsoft account that's associated to my publisher account. In fact, before I go any further, I'm going to pull up a browser here, and I'll log in to dev.windows.com. Dev.windows.com is my way of getting into my publisher account. It's how every developer gets into their publisher account. You go to dev.windows.com and click on dashboard. It takes you right into your developer dashboard where you can handle all of the different apps you may have in the store. So I'll log in as DPUSW. There I am. Ah, blast it. And then it's going to ask for a code to make sure that it's really you. That's why I keep my phone on hand just in case for such things. That's right. Absolutely. Can't get past this. It's all about security.
Yep. It's because it's the first time you've interacted with it from this machine.
Yes. Also because I used an in private session, and so it doesn't recognize me at all.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right. So now I say, I wait for the code, which usually is instantaneous,
exactly.
Except for when you're giving a demo. That's right. All right, as I wait for that, before I go to the website, let me back out here and talk about the capabilities in the store menu. So before I associate this to the store, what's going to change is the packaging right here, by the way. And so I will, I'll show you the other items in the store. So the store menu is right here. I can associate the app in the store with the store, or create the package, which actually rolls up the association as well. You don't have to do both that way. Or capture screenshots. Let me run this app and show you what it looks like. So this is the application. It's a Denver Broncos info hub. No. It's associated with my... Yeah, no, that's right. Plus, I did it yesterday. So this is the app, right? It brings together information about the Broncos. It's not the app we want to talk about now, but it is a nifty app that shows a lot of capabilities. And again, we'll just make it part of the demos that you can get for yourself. This is what we will be submitting here. And in fact, let me try it not in a private browser, just in a browser. And see if that makes a difference. Negatory. Well, that's a real bummer. I'm waiting for this code, Darren, and the code hasn't arrived.
Do it again.
All right, let's just ask for another code, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, good idea.
And that is the right number, yeah?
Yeah, it totally is. It's funny. Let's just repeat the process. Rinse and repeat here. All right. Now I'm sure it'll come quickly.
Do you have any connection?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
That's just crazy.
Blast it. Blast it. Doggone security. Always killing productivity, security is.
I know. Well, that's going to be a short trip. Why don't you build a package anyway for the tour?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'd have to do this anyway. And you know what? I'm going to run it this time in the simulator. We haven't shown that off yet, but it's right here in local machine. I'm going to drop down. You can choose between simulator, local machine, which is the default, or remote machine, which allows me to use the Wi-Fi connection to talk to, say, my Surface right here, right? It's really nice. I'm going to say simulator because what I want to do now is capture a screenshot. You can't submit to the store without a screenshot. So here's the same application running inside my simulator. I'll make sure that the simulator is running at 1366 by 768, which it is, right? And so I'll capture, there's a nice little button right here. It looks like a camera. I'll capture the first one. I'll scroll a little bit because I want to show off my application and kind of entice the user to download it. I'll capture another one and maybe just one more to make three, right? Something like this. All right, great. Now I have three. They'll automatically be put into my photos library, and I can go grab those real easily. Again, you have to have at least one screenshot to submit to the store in the first place. Now, if I were to prepare the app, which is what I'm about to do, if I were to prepare the app, I would say store. Wait, I can't do it while I'm debugging. I still haven't gotten it. I'm dying here. It's killing me. How am I going to submit it to the store? All right, so let's do this, though. I'll right-click and say store, store.create app package. So there are two things that are about to happen. I can create the, or that could happen. The first one is I can create an app package ready for the store. We publish it, and it's ready to go. But I could also say no. Now, no is important because I might actually want to sideload my application onto another device. If I want to sideload onto another device, I say no here, and now it creates a package with all the PowerShell scripts and everything else that I need in order to deploy onto another device. So look, I'll say no, and I'll say next. And when I do, it'll ask me kind of what we were talking about before, which is the platform that I support. So here I'll just say I only support this one. That's because there's no reason to do that. I'm going to change that so that I support all of them. Bam, 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 just like so. Now, this is where it's going to end up. It's in the subfolder of the of where the project is right now. So I'll say create. When I say create, there's nothing for me to do. It builds it, wraps it up inside a package that's ready to be submitted up to the store. But because I said no, it also includes the PowerShell script necessary to sideload it onto another device. Pretty powerful. So let's let that go. It takes just a second to wrap it all together. There's always a pause like this. I wish there was a dialogue instead. But it's all about asynchronous now.
Well, what we could do is we could go back to the slides and look at the output and talk about the cert tools that you have available.
Yeah. Now, before we do, let me just show what the result looked like. So here is the here's the output here, and the output shows an AppX upload, and that is so. There's two things. There's quite a few things created here. In fact, let me delete a few of them so that we can just talk about what a developer might normally see. They'll see the any CPU, more than likely, a folder with all of the assets right there so they could execute it. This includes the PowerShell script right here. So I'm going to sideload it. If I sideload it, I want that folder. Mm-hmm. So I'll go into the folder. These are where all the assets are, including all the resources. Everything is wrapped for me right here. This is what's important. The PowerShell script, that if I were to open that up in Notepad, if I were to open that up in IC by mistake, it looks like Notepad, sort of, kind of. You can see it's just the long list of PowerShell scripts in order to do everything properly. You could do all this manually, Darren. Mm-hmm. You don't have to run the script that
comes
with it.
But look at the script. Why would you want to?
But why would you? Right, exactly. Unless you get paid by the hour, then you might need to. So you can right-click, and I can run it. And it's important that this run in as the administrator.
Administrator, yeah, because it's going to be writing into the app level store.
Right, exactly. And then the application would show up in my start menu and you're good to go. This is nice because I can take this folder, put it on a thumb drive, hand it to my friend, and then they can deploy it or sideload it on their Windows 8 device and help me test it. Mm-hmm. They can't deploy it onto their device if they don't have a...
Dev cert.
If they don't have a... Not dev cert, a Windows developer license.
That's what I mean, dev cert.
Well done, yes, yeah. And so as they install it, it'll prompt them with mm-hmm. a license. All they have to do is log in with their Microsoft account, and it's done, right? Yep. It's not anything special like that, and they're good to go.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're a development shop and you're building an app for a wide release and so on, and you want to make sure it's well tested. You know, you can deploy this to a large number of testers. You know, it's great. You can also produce a build that you put out onto a share that people can access and so on and so forth if you've got distributing testing teams and so on. So it gives you a lot of flexibility from that perspective.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I've got a little, ah-ha-ha.
Did it just arrive?
Yeah, that's hilarious. They all three arrived at once, if you can imagine such a thing. Yeah. All right, 2, 2, 3.
Well, you know what it is we've inspired the world and everyone's submitting apps right now.
That might be what it is.
Or not.
All right, let's hope this works, That is the right code.
You probably wanted the last one. Did you grab the last one?
I did indeed. Brilliant. All right. So this is the developer dashboard on
If we can flip back
dev
to
Windows.
It's green.
Oh, he's there. Beautiful.
He's there.
And apps in progress, right? That's where it all starts. I would want to have an application, and this is how I set it up. I have to set basically the destination for my app up. Then I go back to Visual Studio, and I build to that destination. So we'll start by clicking Submit an App. I'm going to create an app name. I don't really want to take a name up. This is going to be just a sample. So I'll just say ABC123. Then I can say Denver Broncos. Surely there is no app named like that. I can click Reserve an App. It's going to check to make sure that it's unique so I don't conflict with any other app that is there. Beautiful. I'm not. I can click Save. Now there's about 9 steps that you get to go through in order to have your app submitted. I'm on the first of 8 steps. And the next one is selling details. And so because I'm putting my app in the store, I have the ability to sell it at any rate that I want to or just give it away for free. In this case, I'll sell it for $10.99. And I will not offer a trial, but I easily could that you could install right there. Then I decide which market it's going to go into. And look how neat it is that it's already figured out exactly what the currency is and what the rate is today for my application. And as that rate changes, the rate will be updated, right? That's what you would want. And then I can go down and I can say, now when my application is available or it's been approved by the testers, I want it to be submitted into the store on a specific date, right? And so I could say no sooner than because I've got a big party that I'm going to throw. It's a big media party for my application, or maybe just right away, right? Because I'm a small title. I pick where it's going to show up. Earlier you were talking about the category that goes into, mm-hmm. So it's easier to have discoverability of your app. So I pick, you know, this is a health and fitness application, and maybe there's a subcategory. There isn't one in health and fitness, but, you know, I think a lot of football players are in pretty good shape.
Yep, I believe so.
I suppose. Whether or not I have a game would drive whether or not I have to select DirectX functionality that's specific. I'm going to say no to that, and I'll just go to the next step. Now I'm at 2 out of 8. I have to do the first 4 before I can create my package. I have to do the first 5 before I create my package. And so now I can go into advanced features. Advanced features includes the ability to have in-app offers, in-app purchases, right? I might have it so that the user doesn't want advertising. In fact, I'll go ahead and do that. Maybe I have an in-app offer called Hide Ads. Now, that's the key that I would use inside my application, and we'll talk about that in a second. Now, if you want to hide the ads, of course, you've already paid $10 for the app, so this is starting to get ridiculous. But now you want to hide the ads, I'll make that free. They're there until you get rid of them. All right, great. And so that's the only thing. Up here, if I was interacting, say, with the user's SkyDrive, this is where I could set all that up. So I'll go ahead and say save. And then now the third step is done in the process. Now I'll go down to the age rating of my application. Since my application includes advertising, the age rating can't be below 12 years old, right? So if you're going to create a game for children and you're going to include advertising, it has to be a 12-plus age rating, which may actually mess up your ability to get to the right market, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're building a children's game that is, say, 3-plus or whatever, then you're going to have to rethink your monetization strategy around advertising. It may be that you just need to sell it, or maybe you're selling in-app purchases instead. So I'll go ahead and say 12-plus because I know that's what I need to do down here. Because I'm not building a game and because I don't have special considerations, I don't have to worry about what I'm doing in all these other countries. But if you make extremely scary games and extremely violent games, or not extremely, but just games that qualify, then you might have to get a certification from these individual countries before you make them available there. All right, so now I've gone through the next step. This is the 4th of 5 steps. You can see that it's the dashboard has told me that I've got 4 of the 5 steps done. I'll go into cryptography. Darren, I'm sure you already know, but not everybody knows, that it's illegal to export any cryptography outside the United States borders. So it's asking if I'm doing that. If so, it would change the breadth of my application without a doubt. Does it call or use or contain any cryptography? I'm going to say no, and I'll confirm that I'm telling the truth, and then I'll say go. That's the entire piece of that step, whether or not you have cryptography. Again, it doesn't mean you can't use cryptography. It just you need to know the implications if it is. All right, now I can go into packages. This is what the stuff that I need to upload into from my local machine up to the browser, up to the web, so it can start evaluating it. So now I'll go back here. All right, so I can go into my info hub, and this time I'll say associate. Let me go to store.associate with the store. I'm going to sign in. Again, I was dpeus@live.com. And here we are. Login mic at dpeusw@live.com. It's just a little demo account to show this off. It's really handy. There you can see ABC123 Denver Broncos. That's because I just created it inside my dashboard. I can select it now. When I say next, it'll double check to make sure everything's good, and I can click associate. Now, if I go into packaging, I can see it's actually ABC123 Denver Broncos, and it references the right developer. Earlier, it wasn't the right developer. So now I've changed it over to the DPEUSW developer, and I can right-click it now and say store, create app package. I don't need to, and then here it's going to say, are you building it for the store? This time I'm going to say yes, and it does some special things for me. I'll say sign in. Again, it's DPEUSW. And I log in just to verify my credentials. Make sure that I'm building for the right one. I'll say next. I'll leave everything here the same, so it goes to every... in fact, I'll do this so we don't get all those others like before. And I'll say create. Now I wait as it processes my application, builds it, wraps it up, and prepares an AppX upload file that I give to the website. So here it is. This is the result page. It gives me the option to use the Windows App Certification Kit. That's the WAC of all things.
Indeed.
The Windows App Certification Kit. Automated tests that run against my application to see if it would pass the automated portion of the store certification.
And the key thing about this is these are exactly the same tests that's going to be run by the certification team.
Yes.
So you could run these in advance of, and would strongly recommend that you run these well in advance of any submission deadlines you may have, so that you can address any local failures before going through the time sink of submitting and getting a response back from the team.
That's right. It may take 3-4 minutes for you to run that certification kit against your application, but it could save you 2-3 days of a turnaround with the store that rejects your application for something you could have tested for. That sort of transparency in the process of the certification process is really a benefit to the Windows Store. It really does as much as we can to help developers get through the store and not be surprised if they happen to hit a rejection. Right, that's the goal. Okay, so now I'm just going to take this app, this AppX upload file and drag it into this little box. Turns red when you do that. It uploads it. It's a small little app or it's a small little project, so it'll upload very quickly. The next thing it does is it expands it on the server and validates that it's the right project type and that the core pieces are there and valid, and also validates against my publisher type to make sure I'm not asking for any capabilities that I don't deserve having. All right, so there we have it. The upload package is ready. It's turned green. Everything's good. I'll click save, and now I'm past the sixth step of the 8 steps in order to submit to the store. Now I can go down to the description. The description is probably, well, without a doubt, it's one of the most important pieces of your application in order to make it successful in the store. You want to make sure that the description of your app needs to be more than 80 characters. Obviously, this is not a valid description either. It also needs to describe your app. You can't just put gibberish in here. You can't say blah, blah, blah. There really is a process that reads through your description to make sure that it fits the actual proposition of your app, that it's useful and actually describes your application. And this is your opportunity here to go in and, if you are going to localize the different languages, this is where you do the localization. This is where you can go in and say, now I want to add French, now I want to add German, now I want to add Chinese or whatever. You can list out your features if you want to. Here's where you would add your screenshots. I'll go ahead and grab those. Again, they were automatically put into my pictures library in the Windows Simulator folder. See, there they are. And so I can take the first one, let's just say, and it'll automatically upload. The size is important, right? It has to be exactly 1366 by 768 or portrait. And then you have to have some sort of comment. This is the hub. But you wouldn't say this is the hub. You would say something like, this app allows you to see even more data than you can use. Something like that, right? I mean, just crazy, whatever you want to put. But you can't leave it as just a screenshot without some sort of description. It's up to you to make a quality description. This is your app. It's up to you, right? All right, so now the update would only be populated if your application, this is version 2, version 1.1, something else. You're just saying, what's the difference between the one before this and the one that? It's very valuable when the user's trying to investigate why they might want to upgrade your application or not.
And typically, most people aren't really exploiting that particularly well. They say bug fixes,
yeah. You know,
which really isn't that helpful. So do try and communicate clearly to your end users.
Yeah, that's right. Users certainly appreciate you going the extra mile. They get a better feel, you know, for your application. Here's hardware recommendations. I think it's important to say here, you might say the beefiest machine here, this certainly isn't a constraint. This is not, it will still install on anything that doesn't meet your recommendation. These aren't requirements. Keywords that you might use, this is up to you. If you start using spam keywords, you know, for example, you write a Notepad app and your keyword is Skype, right? That obviously won't fit you have the potential of being you have the potential of not being certified, but you even have the potential of being decertified later. The copyright that belongs here, maybe this is to me, maybe it's to you, wherever the copyrights belong, you can even put more than one if you want. Any license terms that you have there, the user can see that as they install it. And then whether or not you have promotional images. A lot of developers wonder what this section is about. This section is, what if you are focused, what if you are featured in the store? What pictures do you want them to use? These are the marketing pictures that you provide to them so that this is what will show up in the store. Let's say you do gain quite a bit of momentum and you are a pretty nice app. They can show you in the store right away without having to contact you and work it out, right? A website that you might want them to be able to find more information about your app. The email or some sort of contact information if they need support. Not putting information here is a real problem because, I mean, it's required, but if the user doesn't have a way to contact you for support, then they're probably going to put their support requests in their comments, in their reviews.
Yes, and the last thing you want is a one-star bug report.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then privacy policy, and this is, I would say this is the number one reason why applications are denied from the store certification is because whatever it is that they're doing uses the internet in some way. And as soon as you use the internet, you have to have a privacy policy. The privacy policy might be inside your application, but it doesn't matter. If you don't have a way of accessing your privacy policy through this dialogue right here, then you won't be allowed in. And so this is the number one reason I see over and over again, the need for an externally available privacy policy. And then remember when we added hide ads, right? So I might say hide advertisement. All right, so what's happened here is hide ads is the key that I use to find the in-app purchase in my code. But hide advertisement is what the user sees when they're about to actually purchase it. So I want to give that kind of friendly text to it. So now I've gone through the entire description section. I'll go ahead and save it. And now I'm 7 out of
8.
The 8th step is the easiest of all. Wait a minute. I missed something in description. Doggone it. Let's see what it was. What do you think it is? What do you think it is?
Description.
Oh, I don't think I didn't put a support email at the bottom. Look at that.
Yep.
Jerry@email.com. I recommend putting a valid email.
I would recommend it.
jnixon@microsoft.com. That's me right there. Need to get a hold of me? Just email it.
Well, you have his cell phone number and now you have his email. Jerry will be pinged.
That's right. Ping me. I'm not afraid. It's okay. All right, so I'll go ahead and save it. Now the description will be finished. I can go to the final step. It's pretty nice. I mean, as many pieces as there are here, they all each make sense. I'll go to the notes to the tester. That's the final step.
Now, this can be incredibly important.
This can be incredibly important. If your application is complex, and let's say it requires some sort of authentication in order to use, and you don't provide a way for the testers to authenticate into your app and test it, that's a failure.
That's a fail.
Because they just can't see it, right?
Yeah.
There are other things. I mean, if your application is complex, regardless of authentication, but it needs to be explained to a user who doesn't otherwise know how to use it, you explain to the tester here. Mm-hmm. And it is actually very important that you enable the tester to be able to validate your app. And if not, it doesn't mean you'll necessarily not be certified. It does potentially mean that the certification process could take a lot longer than it needs to.
Because you might have some interaction where you get emails backwards and forwards and so on and so forth, and that's a pain in the butt. So again, do try and prepare and think in advance of the scenarios. You know, as Jerry mentioned, if you need authentication, you're going to have to create a test account for them. You know, if say you do Facebook integration for whatever reason, and you expect somebody to put in a Facebook username and password, they are not going to enter in their own details. They're not going to enter in their personal details. You need to create a test account that they can leverage. If you have other needs of IDs, you need to give them a list of IDs that they can test. If there are different states that you can enter into where you're only observing rather than being fully engaged and so on, different roles, then you need to make sure you have all of that and explain how they're going to use it. So don't just casually put this across and expect them to pass it because they can't get past the logon screen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You can put something friendly, but at the same time, you can leave this blank. It might be that the app that you've written doesn't have any of these qualifications, and so you can leave it blank. So you can see I've got a checkbox now to all of the different steps in the publishing process. Now I can say submit for certification. And when I do, basically that changes its flag to put it in the queue for certification. There's nothing left for me to do but wait and see whatever happens through the process. Now, this is a test account, and so I don't have a bank account associated with it. But without a bank account associated with your account, you can't submit to the store. Well, you can submit to the store, but it won't go to that final step of being in the store. It'll go through certification.
Yeah,
the other thing is to validate my credit card. You also have to validate a credit card. A lot of developers are surprised that you have to have a credit card. Even students that are free, they have to use a credit card to validate basically that they're 18 years old. And then you have to have a payout account into that bank account so that if your app makes any money, they know where to deposit it. But if you're giving away your app for totally free, you still have to do it. A lot of people are surprised by that too. It's just the way it is. So those are the two things that are required for the certification.
And if you're doing it in a company as well, then there's more details around verifying your company is valid and so on and so forth.
That's exactly right. If you pick the $99 version, that's for companies, then you also have to validate that you are that company and that you speak for that company.
And you're an executive that's authorized to speak for the company and so on and so forth.
Right. So this is in process. These are warnings to say what has to be done for that final step to work, but it is already in certification. Here's the first step, and they go through. It's not until here that a real person gets involved. And so there's quite a bit of automated testing. It goes back to the Windows Application Certification Kit, that a lot of those automated tests are what are run right there, and right now they're just queued on the server to be the next one tested.
Good job.
It's pretty straightforward, pretty cool. I mean, once you put your app together, absolutely you want to put it into the store so you can start making money, so you can start getting exposure, so you can get the experience that you want. We find that when we lead developers and students through this process, even with a very simple application, once you get the confidence of the process down, it's a lot easier to go and do your next application, right, and start building and building. The process itself is actually very clean and easy.
Yep, that's great. Especially if you prepare and think in advance of what you need to have.
What should you think of?
Well, I think, what can't you think of?
Let's just recap the day, shall we?
Yeah. Wow, the day.
Yeah. I mean, here we are at the end. I mean, we talked about, let's actually go through it. So we talked about the core features of Windows 8 that you can't ignore. Your application should not just leverage them, but also embrace them.
How to integrate with the ecosystem.
How they integrate with the ecosystem so that other applications you can leverage and kind of have a similarity between them. That's right.
Yep. How to design.
How to use the Windows design language so that your application not only looks like other apps, but also has a consistent interaction and also addresses the common touch points, the common use cases, the way that you might show errors, the way that all these pieces that are all well documented up on MSDN. Definitely embrace those so that your application isn't just willy-nilly. That's right.
The basics of XAML.
That's right. The fact that we're using XAML, I mean, I would argue that XAML is the UI of choice. I mean, I certainly have chosen it. There's other choices as well, though. If you're a C++ developer, we have C++ CX. That uses XAML as well. Also gives you the opportunity for DirectX. Mm-hmm. JavaScript developers can certainly use HTML5. Again, you want to kind of lean towards where your skills are. If you're right down the middle of the road, I say XAML is the right way to go. If you're heavily into JavaScript, then HTML5 may be the best choice for you as well.
Yeah. I've certainly seen HTML5 developers, once they've been exposed to the capabilities of XAML and the types of controls that are part of the platform, certainly turn around and say, well, maybe it's worthwhile actually investing in learning in some XAML and learning some C# and actually building these apps.
That's right. Touching the system itself through the file system, being able to leverage that roaming features that it has, as well as your local and temp folders as well. And, I mean, jumping to the end, but being able to use that as a data strategy by
Absolutely.
Itself, or leveraging something like SQLite.
Yeah. View models, data binding.
There are specific patterns that have been created for XAML, right?
Yeah.
XAML is a stateful technology. That's why model view, view model works so well. Mm-hmm. To do it without a view model is really, it's just doing it the wrong way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just adding more
pain than
you
need. It becomes very difficult. Any non-trivial application that isn't leveraging view models behind the scenes becomes increasingly difficult to maintain because you necessarily have to duplicate the same logic throughout your application.
Yeah.
You know, the advantage of the view model and the advantage of leveraging things such as repositories and those kind of encapsulation patterns are you centralize this reusable assets that you can leverage everywhere throughout your application.
There are differences in the Windows runtime as well, and the process lifecycle management is an important thing to keep in mind when you're building your app so you can handle suspension, termination, and that resume.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's about a whistle-stop tour of what we went through today.
Yeah, absolutely it was. And so then your application's ready, submit it to the store, and you're ready to go. It's pretty sweet.
Yep.
It is. All right, don't forget, we have all of our source code up on CodePlex. XAML.codeplex.com is where you can get it. I'm here with Darren May. You can find him at crank211.com. Twitter. He's on the Twitterverse at Darren May. Again, I'm Jerry Nixon, jerrynixon.com.
And please fill out the last survey.
Yep, there is a final survey. Please don't forget to fill that out. And don't forget, the third section is coming a few weeks from now. We'll have it all scheduled, put up on Microsoft Virtual Academy. Until then, thank you.
Thanks for listening.